weird when you whisper it like that.
Action.
Okay. Too far.
Hey, guys. Welcome to another weird episode of Central Coast Uncorked.
I just like that for once, I'm not the one making it weird.
Nobody knows that. Nobody knows my whisper voice. So it could be your whisper voice. That was you, Jane.
This is my whisper voice. Hi. Hi. It's different from Shanice's.
This is derailing very quickly. So today we are bringing you to Monochrome Winery, which the only thing I know about Monochrome is that they only do white wines, which is really cool.
Yeah, it is super cool. Client recommended it. She seems to have very good taste in wine from conversations we've had, so I'm pretty stoked to check it out.
Yeah, me too. Especially it's, you know, we're coming into summertime when more people think about drinking white wine and want to drink white wine. I personally think white wine can be drunk all year round.
Yes. I am kind of excited because I'm pretty sure I've never been to a place that only does white wine before.
Yeah. Most places only like do like one or two white wines and then that's it.
Yeah. So right. I'm stoked.
Well, we will let you guys listen to
whatever happens.
Well, yeah, whatever happens. And we will catch up with you afterwards.
Yeah. Why only whites? Is there a reason for that, or you just like whites?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of reasons. I think one of the most obvious ones is you look around Paso, and there's something in the neighborhood of 350 wineries around here now, and basically all of them are either exclusively or primarily focused on reds.
Yeah.
And I think when you go into most of those places, they have one or two whites.
A Sauvignon Blanc or a Chardonnay.
You know, and that's about it. There are a few exceptions, but not many. And I think some of them make a serious effort at making good ones, but they tend not to make much of them. So you're never sure if they're actually pouring at any given moment. And I think it's safe to say that at a fair number of places, it really isn't where their passion is. You know, they put more energy and effort into their red program than they do in their whites. So it just kind of felt like white wines were being underserved, both literally and figuratively here.
Cool.
So we wanted to try to make a full lineup of whites where we put the same level of effort and attention to detail that people put in their reds around here.
That's awesome. I think that's really cool.
Very neat. So, I mean, so I see like an Albarino, Chenin Blanc. What's your flagship?
I don't think we really have a flagship.
Okay.
You know, our winemaking style is a bit different. It really stems from when I was making wine in garage and didn't know what I was doing. You know, at first you don't know what the right fermentation temperature is and the best strain of yeast and the right amount of oak and all that sort of thing. And I figured I'd make a bunch of different versions all in, you know, 1 to 5 gallon batches, and I'd make them all differently, changing all those parameters. And the theory was is that I'd find the one that was the best, and then that would become the model for how we'd make the wines going forward. And what I found instead was having a bunch of different versions that had all been made differently and therefore had different flavors, different aromas, different textures to them, gave us a lot more to work with when it came time to blend. You know, I think it's a little analogous to cooking in that regard, in that, you know, if you're cooking and you only have two ingredients to work with, you're going to be kind of limited and your dishes are going to be a little one-dimensional. But if you have a whole pantry full of things that you can pull from and, you know, different spices, different flavors, different textures, you can come up with something a little bit more complex and interesting and have more fun doing it. So that pretty much became our style for making wines. We make everything in really small quantities, and then we make, you know, typically barrel and half barrel sizes, and then we intentionally make each of those differently. So we'll ferment some warmer, some cooler, different yeast, different types of vessels. We'll clarify some of the juice before we go to barrel. Others we take it dirty straight from the press. We do skin fermentation, just generally try to spread the range of flavors as much as we can and then have fun blending.
Cool. I'm so excited to have like only whites. This is a new experience for me.
We felt like this was the perfect time of year too, since we're coming into summer and I mean, I know I've been drinking a lot of white wine even throughout the winter. It's just been what I've been craving.
Well, I think a lot of people still think of white wines as being either kind of a lean, acidic Sauvignon Blanc or a big buttery, oaky Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can certainly find those two styles, but there's a lot more options than that. And I think there are a lot more people now that are kind of doing things outside of those particular 2 points, which I think is great. Different varieties, Spanish white varieties, mm-hmm. Italian white varieties, different French white varieties, various blends. You know, I think it's all good.
Well, we've talked about that too, because, you know, I think in one of our more recent episodes, you know, she tells me that I was like a white wine snob. Like, I'd be like, no, I don't drink white wine.
She really
I
was.
I would turn my nose up at it. But I think that's a reflection of this area. Like, I grew up in this area. This is like where I really like learned about wine, and there's just not a ton of variation. And so until you start drinking different wines and more wines, exploring different regions, like, you don't realize that there's so much out there.
Right. Yeah, and our wines are, I mean, intentionally different. We try to make wines that don't taste like everybody else's wines. We don't limit ourselves to being single variety or single vineyard or worry about little things like terroir or typicity or anything like that. We just try to make interesting wines that are kind of complex and well-balanced and flavorful, and, you know, whatever it takes to do that, we do it.
Cool, awesome.
Well, shall we get started?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So first wine I'll pour is called Barrel Distortion. It's an Albarino. It's actually a blend of different versions of Albarino, but the fruit came from Plum Orchard Lane Vineyard in the Templeton Gap area. So it's about maybe a half mile west of where Trader Joe's is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made a bit differently. Most Albarinos tend to be made in big stainless steel tanks. This one's almost all barrel fermented. Primarily neutral French oak, a little bit of stainless, and then 4% was skin fermented, which is more the way you typically make a red wine than a white wine. So it just gives it a different different aromatic and flavor component to the wine, which we thought was kind of cool.
I like Albarino, like generally speaking. This glass is amazing.
I know, it's beautiful.
It really is. My goodness. Ooh, that is very different. That's really good.
Well, thank you.
I like the finish. I like how it lingers.
I like that there's like so many different things going on. Mm-hmm. Like my mouth feels confused.
It's like I had to think about
in
it all
the
way through.
Way. Like...
Well, that's certainly one of the things we tried to do is, you know, there are a lot of whites that are made in rather a simple style and they're crisp mm-hmm. and refreshing. Nothing wrong with that, but they tend to be a little bit one dimensional.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to try to kind of have as much complexity as you get in a good red typically.
So do you feel like your wines could be paired with a wider variety of food than, like, a basic white?
Yeah, I do. For a couple of reasons. For one thing, they have a little bit more body, a little bit more richness, which I think makes them more versatile. While we try to make sure they have good acidity, I think we try to avoid them being tart.
Yeah.
Some of the more very lean, tart whites, they go with a fairly narrow range of foods.
Yeah.
These have a little bit more body, but they still have good acidity. I think, you know, my wife and I drink the leftovers at the end of the weekend, and we tend to drink with just about everything, kind of up to including steak on occasion. With the bigger ones, you know, I tend to pour these kind of from lighter to bigger, so the first ones you'll taste are a little bit more on the lighter side.
Yeah, that's really good. It's delightful. And so it's not like super cold. Is mm-hmm. this like your ideal temperature?
You know, I think a lot of people serve whites too cold.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting out by the pool and it's 105, then do what you need to do and chill it as much as you want. But I think if you over chill wine, you lose out mm-hmm. on some of the aromatics and therefore some of the flavor components. I usually recommend that most good whites get served somewhere between maybe 50 and 58 degrees.
I always think that's interesting just because I never know.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to find out.
And so this is drinking super nice right now. Or is that like the expected time frame that like people would like buy it now, drink it now? Or would you recommend laying down?
Well, I think it is drinking well now. I think there's nothing wrong with getting it and drinking it tonight or tomorrow or whatever. But I think a lot of people assume that red wines age for a long time and improve, and white wines don't, and neither of those is always true. Certainly a lot of red wines never get any better than the day you buy them. And I think even though a lot of whites are made to be consumed young, the better ones can age for a lot longer than most people think they will. Mm-hmm. I think certainly some of the good French white wines will age 10, 15, 20 years, mm-hmm. something like that. We have limited track history given that 2016 was our first vintage, so yeah. I can't really say anything with certainty, but I think most of these will age well for at least the next 3 to 5 or more years.
Yeah, because there's, I love the acidity on this, and I usually find, you know, that it is tart, like it's in the front of your palate, and mm-hmm. I find that this hits me more, like, afterwards, like it's mm-hmm. more the finish that I detect the acidity, which is nice.
Well, I think that acidity in white wines is one component of having them age well. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have enough acidity, then they don't age as well. But I think the fact that these are almost all of them are basically barrel fermented, you tend to get some of that aging out of the way earlier, and they age a little more gracefully later on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can tell you that my wife and I are frequently drinking leftovers that have been open for a week and a half, and they still taste
good. Oh, wow, that's pretty impressive.
You know, I think that may be a good directional indicator.
I usually just make spaghetti sauce or chicken piccata or something at that point. Like, I never even think to try it. Maybe I should.
All right, the next one is called Neither Here Nor There. And it started off kind of as an idea of making a bit of a Sancerre-inspired take on Sauvignon Blanc blend, but it kind of went off in a different direction. It ended up being a blend of, it's 47% Sauvignon Blanc, it was barrel fermented, 47% barrel fermented Chenin Blanc, and then 6% was skin-fermented Sauvignon Blanc. The skin-fermented component in this really adds some interesting aromatics and I think contributes to a really long finish. The name is kind of a reference to the fact that it has a lot of inputs from, kind of inspirations from various parts of the wine-growing region, certainly the Sancerre area, certainly a little bit of the lower Loire River Valley, where they do a lot of Chenin Blanc work. And then it's got a touch of the New Zealand style on the nose. I think that comes from the skin fermented component, a little bit of that grapefruit and grassiness, although I don't actually get that on the palate. So even though it has inspiration from a lot of places, it's kind of its unique thing. It's really not like any other wine I've tasted.
Will there be Cappy?
Will there be Cappy?
No, there will not be.
I like the names.
Well, thank you.
No, there's no cat pee. Rest assured. Rest assured, everybody. There's no cat pee on, what is it, tomato leaves or something? Wow, I'm so glad that I don't have to guess what any of these are. Because I'd be sitting here for 4 hours like,
Well, I always joke. I never quite know whether Psalms would love us or hate us on general principles. Because on one hand, I think we do a lot of really interesting, creative type stuff. Hmm. But on the other hand, right? if you're trying to pinpoint a variety and say this is a typical this or typical that, none of our wines are that. They're all kind of unusual blends made unusual
ways. Yeah, that's fun though. I would not want Kurt to be like, guess what this is? My husband likes to if I have him open a bottle of wine, he will hide it and be like, you have to guess what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's... Sometimes I can get it because I know what we have in the wine fridge.
Well, there was one guy that was works at one of the kind of the Santa Cruz Mountains wineries, et cetera, their on staff sommelier, and he tasted here a while back. And his opinion, this was kind of like the least Paso wine ever made in Paso.
I think he meant that
as a compliment, but it's a little bit weird.
It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. I just keep wanting to drink more to dissect it more.
I like wine that confuses me.
That makes you think is a better way to say that, probably.
Well, no, but it
exercises your brain.
But it's not as accurate.
Well, we try to steer clear of the response of, that's interesting.
See, confusing is better.
Hopefully it's interesting and good.
It's interesting in a good way.
Yeah.
The first sip I took, I got some buttery notes. And I initially was like, this would be really good with seafood. But it tastes different every single time that I'm drinking more of it. I like that one.
I like both of them.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the Viognier and Roussanne.
Okay.
I'm really excited. Of course, it has to be the one I want the most has to be at the end.
But there's going to be so much more stuff in between.
I know.
You're going to find, you're going to have a different favorite by the time we get
Probably.
Okay, the next one's called Variations on a Theme. And part of the reason for the name is it's a bit of a variation on a traditional white Bordeaux blend, which would normally be a mix of Sauvignon Blanc and a grape called Semillon. But turns out it's kind of hard to find good Semillon around here.
I've never even heard that word.
Yeah, it's
that's
fairly rare.
A lot
rare
of wine tasting. Never heard that word.
Yeah, it's one of the blending components typical of white Bordeaux's. But we ended up using Marsan instead, which of course is a white Rhone variety. But the thinking was is that it has some similarity to Semillon in the sense that neither has a really strong or distinct aromatic or flavor signature, but they do bring a richness, some body, maybe a little bit of honey notes to the wine, which can round out and complement Sauvignon Blanc. So this is about 70% Sauvignon Blanc, 30% Marsan. Sauvignon Blanc came from McGinley Vineyard down in the Happy Canyon area near Santa Barbara. Marsan was from a small little vineyard up in the hills here called Wind Rock.
I just realized that the last one had grapes from Jurassic Park Vineyard.
Yep.
I've never wanted to go anywhere so badly.
I know, I was reading that
like,
too.
I'm hearing the music as I drive through the vineyard, like from Jurassic Park, which I think my client might have scored.
Yeah?
I think so. He had something, something to do with it.
Something. We don't know what.
So even though this one and the last one are both primarily Sauvignon Blanc, I think you'll find they're very, very different wines between the two of them.
So you were saying that you like all of the grapes to get here within 3 hours of being picked, mm-hmm. right? So when you have them coming from so many different vineyards, do you have to like coordinate it so they all get here like at the same time, or are they,
well, they all come in
separate
in different,
enough?
They all come in different days typically. So we, you know, Riley and I will kind of monitor things as they're going along. Riley spends a lot of time going out and kind of walking the vineyards and things like that, and we monitor the samples for Brix and acidity and all that sort of thing, and then we make a call as to when they're going to pick. So usually they all come in different days. Sometimes we'll have a couple varieties come in from different vineyards on the same day, but we try to choose the pick dates specifically for each varietal so we get that in optimal condition.
Yeah, that's completely different. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like this is a little bit more like my mind would go to Sauvignon Blanc with this more than the last one. I might not get it right if I picked that, but like it has that tartness that I feel like sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I like what the Marsan brings to it.
Yeah, this one I don't think you really get any of the New Zealand grassy grapefruit on this profile.
0P. Obviously, I recently learned.
You're so excited to keep saying it.
Cappy. That's like a weird thing, and I'm still not 100% sure what that smells like.
You know, I think there are a couple of styles that seem to be very polarizing in white wines. One of them is that New Zealand style, the grassy grapefruit / cat pee profile. Some people love that, some people don't care for it. And then the other one is the buttery oaky style Chardonnays that some people love and others don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth with the Chardonnay like that. Like, sometimes I like it, and then other times I'm like, this is disgusting. Like,
right.
I would eat popcorn if I wanted butter.
Right.
I do like a tart, like Sauvignon Blanc, like the cat pee one, in summertime, like when I'm in my driveway pool, because I like it so cold, and it gets like, it's very refreshing.
Right.
And it's usually pretty cheap. So.
That's always good.
So you don't.
I can drink a lot of it. Yeah,
in your driveway.
I don't feel bad about wasting it. I think I like neither here nor there the best so far.
All right. The next one is first one in the back page. It's called Altered Images. Another unusual blend. So this is a combination of 52% Chardonnay and 48% Chenin Blanc. The Chenin again came from Jurassic Park Vineyard. That was fermented and aged primarily in neutral French oak barrels. The Chardonnay was from a vineyard called Donnacay down in Santa Rita Hills, right next to Sanford and Benedict. And that was actually done in an amphora. So it was fermented and aged in an amphora, which is a big unglazed clay pottery vessel, like terracotta. Mm-hmm. But amphora were basically what people would use to make wine back when people first started making wine 6,000 or 8,000 years ago. So it's a throwback in that regard. It doesn't give you the oakiness that an oak barrel would. It gives you a little bit more minerality and kind of some interesting vibrancy.
I went to a winery in Corsica the other day, and they had the biggest like terracotta holding tank I've ever seen. It was massive. It was really cool. I don't remember if I got a picture or not, but it was, I was like, whoa, like, you know, you
did
see
they tell you how big it
they're
was?
They're like little, probably, but in French.
Oh.
Or, no, they, like, the court, whatever they speak in Corsica, it's like French, but a little bit different. A little, like, rougher. As is the entire civilization of Corsica is a little rougher than mainland. it was quite interesting. But it was so cool because it was just, like, this big old thing instead of, like, I feel like here they're pretty manageable in size. Not as big.
Like, as big as one of the stainless steel tanks? Or
no,
like...
it wasn't that big.
Okay.
I don't even know how they would make that. But it was, like, maybe twice the size of is any that I've seen here. Who comes up with the names? Ooh, Blasphemy? I already like that one.
Yeah, that's me. yeah, it's hard to come up with good names that aren't already taken.
Yes.
You know, there are 4,000 or so wineries just in California alone, and they all have different wines. And the last thing you want is to go down the road and make your wine and put a label on it and then get hit by a cease and desist nasty gram from someone's lawyer.
Yeah.
So I try to choose names that are a little bit unusual, but say something about the way the wine was made, the spirit of the wine, the idea behind the wine, something like that.
Cool. I like this.
Thank you.
It's like, first I'm like, ooh, Chardonnay. Nope, 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 not. But it is.
I kind of am the reverse. Like, I get the Chardonnay at the end.
Oh, that's weird.
You have a weird palate.
Yeah. I've always liked white wine. You're the one with the changing palate, the rotating door of wine palates. I haven't always liked good white wine, but I always liked white wine.
Yeah, I definitely get it at the end. I'm like, oh, I think that was Chardonnay. And in the beginning, I'm like, I'm kind of confused. And the nose, I did not get Chardonnay on the nose.
You're not confused. It's making you think.
That's right. I just need to think harder. So you mentioned this is like your fifth or sixth career.
Mm-hmm.
So did any of your previous careers like set you up to succeed in the wine industry? Or do you have like, were there any...
like crossover?
Yeah, crossover.
You know, not directly. I think there were a lot of indirect things. You know, my first career after I got a couple of engineering degrees, and then I worked down in aerospace in Los Angeles doing radar and stealth technology stuff back at a time where... You know, they were just doing a lot of really weird out there kind of stuff. Like, can we make a bomber, you know, appear the size of a hummingbird, you know? And it just teaches you to think way out of the box and be creative and do some different types of things and not just do what everyone has always done before. And, you know, I think that's thinking sort of carries over to the way we make the wines here. I have no interest in trying to be... make wines that are just like somebody else's wines.
Yeah.
It's not that there's anything wrong with those, it's just they're already out there, so why would I make a wine that's the same as somebody else's, you know? And I admit I get a little discouraged sometimes when I see a lot of the wineries around here that are all kind of doing the same thing, you know, yet another red Rhone blend done the same way. So, again, there's nothing wrong with that, but for me, I'd prefer to make and drink something that's a little unique and a little more creative.
Yeah. I've never really thought, like, I'm glad you said that, like, engineering and creativity, like, you don't hear those words in a sentence together very often, but it's true. Like, I don't, I think of, like, engineers, and I kind of think of, like, a really smart, kind of nerdy person that's good
like, very
math.
Logical.
Like, and, yeah, like, not creative, but it is very creative, and I'm sure
just
so many
approach.
Ways that I don't even understand, I guess.
Well, I think, you know, my thinking about wine, I think I'm more inspired by... other creative endeavors like music or cooking or arts or anything like that than I am by, you know, what other winemakers are doing.
For sure.
You know?
Well, otherwise it's just cookie cutter wine.
Right. It's the same thing with a different label.
All right, the next one's called Blasphemy. This is 100% Chardonnay, but... And Riley actually had to talk me into even making a Chardonnay, because ordinarily I'm not a big fan of the Bud Ryoki-style Chardonnays. So we wanted to avoid the two extremes. We didn't want to get too buttery and oaky, and we also didn't want to just do stainless steel only. So We actually made about 6 different versions. Each barrel was treated differently, so different fermentation temperatures, different types of yeast, some native, some cultured. We clarified the juice in some cases by cold settling it before going to the barrel. In others, we took it, so to speak, dirty, straight from the press with great particles and things still in it. We used some new oak. There's about 25% new French oak. The rest is neutral. But we did not go through what's called malolactic fermentation, so you don't have as much of the creamy, buttery notes as you get in a lot of California Chardonnays. We wanted to kind of maintain kind of good balance and kind of nice crisp finish to it.
Like, I don't know. I don't like the word malolactic. Like, anything that has that in it, like, it's kind of already down a few points to me just because of the word.
Why don't you?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Like, I think because, like, I'm like, oh, mallow, tallow, soap, with, like, I don't know.
At least you can go to tallow, which would be worse, but.
I don't know. There's just something, it's like masticate. I don't like that. Like, you know, these words, I don't like them, and it makes me not want to, like, think about it. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm
and, like, lactic, like, milk.
Well, that's lactating. That's where the name came from. You know,
none of that, like, I'm all for it. It serves its purpose, but I don't want to affiliate it with my wine, please. Man, I don't even know where my mind's at.
I like this a lot. Mm-hmm. I think it is a nice balance between...
It is.
Just, you know, like, that pure stainless.
Yeah.
And then...
I agree. I like the finish.
Yeah.
I like... Because it's still Chardonnay-y. But not, like, I don't feel like I need to, like... eat something to cut through that, like, texture it leaves sometimes.
Yeah. It's really nice.
Yeah. It is. It's a little bit confusing to me. I'm thinking about it, but I like it. I want to keep drinking it. Like,
yeah, I'm getting, like, some citrus.
I'll take a glass, please.
Well, it's funny. As I said, Chardonnay tends to be rather polarizing these days, and I get a fair number of people that come in and say, I don't like Chardonnay. Don't even bother pouring one for me. And I usually say, well, ours isn't quite what you're expecting. You might want to try it. You might actually like it. And they usually end up liking it because it isn't as buttery and oaky as some California Chardonnays.
I do feel like you've done a really good job of kind of slicing down the middle. Like, it really is not either way.
Right.
It's like the best of both.
Mm-hmm.
How often do people break your wine glasses?
actually, not very often.
They're so beautiful.
I've only had, I think, 3 that broke since I opened the tasting room. One of them, it was before I even put the rug down on the floor. And he was waving his hands while he was talking and knocked one onto the tile floor, and that was the end of that. They actually go through a washing machine. You got to be a little careful when you're drying and polishing them. That's where, if you're not paying attention, you're just cranking on them, you can break them.
Yeah, they are. It's beautiful, but then I'm like, it's on this nice little coaster that's high though, and I'm being very careful because I'm always the one that
the
breaks
tourist.
It. Like, I
at home she has stainless wine glasses because she's broken too many.
Yeah, like I.
Or at least not a sippy cup, so you know.
I have one of those too, actually, but it's like a camping cup and it's plastic. And it's really bad, but can't break it.
Someday you'll be a grown up.
Probably not.
I think this one's my favorite so far.
Really?
Well, this and the Albarino. Yeah, I really liked the Albarino.
I'm still into neither here nor there.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Those are like my top 3.
3 out of 5, that's pretty good.
All right, the last one's called Wall of Sound. This is a blend of Viognier and Roussanne. It's about 52% Viognier, 48% Roussanne. Came from 2 different vineyards, both down in the Santa Ynez Valley area. But they actually came in the same day, so we ended up co-pressing and co-fermenting these 2 varieties together, although we broke them up into about 8 different barrels, treated each of those differently, different fermentation temperatures, different types of yeast, clarified, not clarified, that sort of thing. Mainly neutral, we did use 2 new French oak half barrels, so 30-gallon barrels versus the normal 60. Like all of our wines, they're all aged on the lees until they're bottled. Gives it a little bit more mouthfeel, a little more smoothness, maybe a little bit of bread notes to them. Did not go through malolactic, which none of our wines do. So.
Good. If it did, don't tell me.
So when you guys, like, if you're treating the same wine so many different ways, right? Mm-hmm. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yep.
So do you use all of that, or do you have some where you're like, well, that was not a good idea?
No, we had very few that were not, you know, we didn't use in some way, shape, or form. We don't limit ourselves to being single variety or single vineyard, and so we can take certain ones that, you know, maybe some would be great flavors but seem like they need a little more acidity, and we've got some others that have great acidity, and we can take some of those out of here and balance them over there. And then sometimes within a given variety, some of them, for example, the Chardonnay, most of it we did in barrels, you know, oak barrels that went into the blasphemy, but some of it we did in neutral and stainless that ended up going into another blend that we did called Analog in a Digital Age. There was a blend of 81% Marsan and 19% Chardonnay. The Marsan was done in the amphora, but it just kind of depends on the characteristics of the specific barrel that we do as to what we ended up doing with it.
Cool. I knew it was going to be my favorite. I just knew it.
What's the biggest group that you can accommodate?
Usually like 8 to 10 is about, works fairly well. I have had up to 14 on occasion, and that gets a little chaotic.
That's like a party.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to keep everyone on the same page when you've got that many people and you have different conversations going on. And, you know, a lot of the reason why my wife and I set this up the way we did was we were aiming more for a vibe of sitting around a dinner table with friends drinking wine rather than standing at a bar somewhere.
Yeah.
And that starts to kind of deteriorate when you've got, you know, 14 people in the room all on their different pages, so.
And so you're by reservation only?
Mm-hmm.
Every day or only on weekends?
Generally Thursdays through Sundays.
Okay.
And I do all the tastings myself.
Cool. I like that.
So it does give people an opportunity to learn a little bit more about wine and winemaking and ask questions and that sort of thing. So it's kind of a different experience than you would get at a lot of other tasting rooms.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch gears again. So you said all of your wines do not go through malolactic fermentation. So refresh my memory. Is malolactic something that happens naturally, or do you have to, as a winemaker, do you have to do something to make that happen?
Well, it will usually happen on its own, in barrels at least. It's a bacterially based form of fermentation, so typically it will happen if you don't do anything.
Okay.
Eventually. Now, you can add cultured bacterial strains that would sort of accelerate and ensure that it does happen if you do want it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't want it to happen, then what you typically will do is wait for it to go through the primary fermentation, which is the yeast-based fermentation, and then you'll give it a little bit of SO2, which knocks down the bacteria that would promote the malolactic fermentation. So that's typically what we do. We wait until the fermentation is finished, then we taste it a bit, figure out when's the right time to add the SO2, then we add the SO2.
Okay. What does it mean that it says, like, aged in barrels on lees?
So the lees are the dead yeast cells. So once the fermentation is finished, the yeast cell is settled to the bottom of the barrel or the bottom of the tank. And you can then either pump the wine off the lees and age them in another vessel.
Oh,
or you can
let
them age on the lees. And aging on the lees gives the wine a little bit more, a little more richness, a little smoother mouthfeel, maybe a little bit of bread notes from the yeast exposure. It also tends to kind of, you know, prevent oxygenation a little bit, which can be good. But we like that effect. It adds a little bit more body and a little bit more complexity and character to the wines. And so basically all of our wines are aged on the lees. The juice goes into the barrel. It ferments in the barrel. It stays in that same barrel until just shortly before we do the bottling. We usually assemble the blends about 3 or 4 days before we do the final bottling.
Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Answer all my questions. That was so good. I love that one.
Did you guys want to revisit any of them?
I think I'm okay.
Yeah, I think I'm okay too.
I have to have more in a little bit.
Okay.
So I gotta like pace myself, otherwise I think I'm funny, but no one else does.
And now it's afterwards.
After.
After.
Welcome back.
I thought that was great. I feel like this was definitely like a more serious episode, which is kind of reflected in the environment of the tasting room. Like it's so cute in there. And like you're sitting down at a table.
You like, just get a little bit more of like a hands-on personal experience.
Yeah. Like, and like, I feel like I learned a lot.
Yeah. You get the opportunity to learn a lot about the wines, a lot about the winemaking approach. They're doing some really cool stuff
with white wines.
Yeah, you know, it's something that you're not going to find at probably any other winery in this area.
Like, I'm not even sure that I realized white wines could be that, like, complex.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had good white wines, blah, 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 all that stuff. But, like, I felt like something kept happening with, like, every sip. Like, it was just nonstop. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. Like Chenin Blanc, I don't think I've ever had Chenin Blanc from a producer in this area. Obviously, yeah, there's
you have. We had one somewhere, but I can't remember where. But we had this conversation then too.
On the podcast?
Maybe.
No, we definitely haven't had Chenin on the podcast. But anyway, regardless,
it's good,
and it's unusual to find, and I think the tasting room and the tasting experience overall were really awesome, and we had a great time.
I enjoyed everything about it. I can't wait to come back here.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like I'm already mentally making a list of people I want to come here.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like some people really love white wine, and like you go to another winery and it's great because there's some white wine and then there's mostly red wine, and that's nice for the people who really like red wine. But then those people who like white wine only get one thing or two things.
Like, kudos to these guys for seeing something that was lacking and filling it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the winemaker himself even said that he doesn't want to do wines like everybody else.
I am a little bit disappointed that he doesn't make red wine, because I feel like it would be amazing. Like,
maybe he'll make another label.
Judging by his white wine, I think his red wine would be outstanding. Yeah. And I feel like he's like keeping something from me by not making it.
I forgot to ask him this, but I think it'd be really interesting if he did like a full-on, like, you know, more skin contact white wine, so like an orange wine, because that's, you know, like a red wine approach to white wine. And they are doing some skin contact fermentation, but it was like a smaller percentage. Like, there wasn't one that like that was the majority of the approach. So that'd be cool. But overall, great stop. If you like white wine, you should definitely come here. If you want to, if you think you don't like white wine, I think you should still come here.
Because this is definitely a impress your friends category too, and a wine nerds category. Like this one's checking off a lot of boxes.
Yes, a lot of boxes. Small groups only, I would say. Not a place to bring your dog or your kid. Definitely come like adults only, people who are into wine, like white wine.
I felt like $15 tasting fee was reasonable because it's six wines and they were all like, I felt like it was worth it. Like, it was so good. It was worth it.
Yeah. We are very impressed.
Yes, clearly we're into it, because I think I've said real good and worth it a lot.
We are very impressed. We really want to thank Monochrome for having us out. Yes,
thank you so much.
And we will see you guys next week for another episode.
Sounds good. Have a nice week.